Hello, everyone. I'm Alicia Krause, and you are about to watch the Michael Knowles edition of The Conversation. It's Michael Knowles' turn to answer all of your burning questions, whether you're curious about international diplomacy, confused about the papal doctrine, or just wanting a good recipe for your sausage lasagna. He has lots of opinions on that and ravioli. I've heard them in the Daily Wire office. Michael's got you covered, so subscribe now to ask questions and join this edition of The Conversation. On Tuesday, December 12th, we will be hosting our fourth episode of The Conversation. We'll be back with Ben Shapiro, and it's hosted by moi, once again, Alicia Krause. It's always fun to, you know, be back on air with Ben after no longer being on the radio with him.
I know, it's true. You were on the radio with him forever.
I actually one time remember telling him, like, it's kind of sad, but I feel like I have more time, like one-on-one time with you with conversations than I do my husband, because we were on the air for 3 hours a day.
You were on the air. I thought you were a hero when I first met you.
Oh, really?
You were on the radio with Ben, and to start your day at some ungodly hour,
like 6 a.m. Like
6 a.m. With just being peppered by Ben, that is a lot. That's pretty hard, because I usually sleep in until about, you know, noon or 12:30. Then I come in, and if I get peppered by Ben, I'm a little rested, you know.
You're well rested.
6 a.m., though.
With
that's
a cigar
hard.
In hand.
Oh, well, after my morning cigar, certainly.
Lord have mercy. Yeah. It must be known, a little behind the scenes here, that Michael does roll in super late, and our poor hair and makeup gal, Jess, who's incredibly talented, as you can see by my cool eyes today, she has like 5 minutes to throw you together you come into this studio and do your show.
Luckily, I always look very underslept, you know, not unkempt hair everywhere.
Five o'clock shadow.
5 o'clock shadow. But that's the key. If you really want to be productive in life, you need at least 14 hours of sleep a day. That's the secret.
So we have people watching right now on Facebook Live.
It's on? Oh, no.
On the Daily Wire website and on YouTube. So, but if people want to actually ask us questions, which are coming in right now, we're going to get rolling to them in the order that they come in, then you have to become a subscriber. So go to the website, dailywire.com, and become a subscriber so you can ask Michael any awkward questions. I have a question for you, though.
Yeah, okay.
Why do you call your fiance...
Sweet little Elisa.
Yes.
That's her name.
But the sweet little, it's a little condescending, right?
It's condescending. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's the name that... not only her parents, but God gave her.
Sweet little is on the birth certificate?
It's because she's a saint. It's going to be, you know, like when popes become saints, it's like Pope Saint John Paul II.
Uh-huh.
So when sweet little Lisa becomes a saint, which is inevitable, she does truly exhibit saintly valor. I don't know if it will be sweet little Saint Elisa or Saint sweet little Elisa. I don't know.
We'll have to see. All right, we have our first question.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
Drum roll from Crispin Edwards. He wants... Crispin, is that a girl's name? I have a weird dude's name, too.
There was
too.
A saint, Saint
right?
Crispin.
Really?
Was saint it, Crispin's Day.
Guy or girl?
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. I don't think it's a girl.
Okay, I'm assuming this Crispin is a girl, and she's asking, will you go to prom with her?
You know, it's
are you a good dancer?
I, as a young actor, you know, I did my first play when I was 8. I was not exactly on the football team. I was not exactly on the baseball team. Mm-hmm. So
you're
you
the know, theater geek.
I was a little, you know, for in not so many words. I obviously had to take some dance classes.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble, you know, it's pretty funny that that question came up right after we were talking about sweet little Lisa.
Uh-huh.
My answer is, I have to check with her. I have to check. Maybe she's not watching. If she's not watching, then the answer is yes. If she is watching, then absolutely not. Absolutely not. How dare you even ask me?
Well, you.
I'm flattered.
You might want to have a chaperone handy, though, too.
She can be the chaperone.
No offense, but if Crispin is a liberal plant, then you
that
just want to be sure.
In these days, normally my answer would, of course, be yes. I would go to prom with anybody. But these days, there's no way not to get Roy Moore Weinstein'd. I threw out my bathrobe. I used to wear a bathrobe. I don't even want to own one of those anymore.
To be fair, though, Roy Moore and Weinstein, there's very legitimate allegations at this point.
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. But I want to just be safe. So I don't want to have bathrobes lying around. That's circumstantial evidence.
Oh, David is asking, how many more episodes will there be of Another Kingdom?
Another Kingdom is the podcast that I'm doing with Andrew Klavan. But when I say I'm doing a podcast with Andrew Klavan, I mean he did all the work and wrote the thing and got it all sorted out. And then I came and recorded it after 14 hours
of sleep.
It's
over on Ricochet, right?
It's over on Ricochet. Mm-hmm. You have a show on Ricochet.
I do, Lady Brains.
Lady Brains. So Another Kingdom is this story about a 30-year-old washed-up schlub named Austin Lively who he's in Hollywood, he can't catch a break. He stumbles into another kingdom and finds himself with ogres and knights and British accents and a bloody dagger and a dead damsel at his feet. And a question is, which is crazier, which is more fantastical, that world or Hollyweird, which he comes out of. So we launch launched it on Friday the 13th. We're on episode 5 is out, and there's going to be there are going to be 13 episodes total. So we'll have, you know, another 8 episodes. You can start it
now.
Oh,
Friday the 13th, 13 episodes.
13 episodes.
I see what you did there.
It's very, yeah. And it's, yeah, I got to tell you, I've been shocked. Obviously, I don't know why Andrew Plavin would cast me in such a role, but.
Well, we know that you like to wear dresses and you're pretty good with the female impersonation.
That's true. There's
I'm
that.
Just saying.
And I will say, I thought I would never work in Hollywood ever again after my blank book, Reasons to Vote for Democrats. I figured I wasn't working a whole lot before, but I assumed I wasn't going to work again. And we have like 600 plus reviews of this podcast now. Mm-hmm. And I realized the key to having a career in Hollywood is to go through conservative politics. If you start in conservative politics, then you can work in entertainment. So it's been a lot of fun. If we get enough, we'll do another season. You know, we can go somewhere
else.
So
is the 13th episode going to be a cliffhanger that leaves it open to another season?
I don't know. I mean, we have done this thing. Since the beginning, the devil has not wanted us to do this project. Files have randomly been deleted. Microphones don't work. Things have fallen apart. Mm-hmm. We're almost finished with it, though. So if, knock on wood, if everything goes okay, we'll have to see how the story ends. I don't want to give anything away.
So I have another question for you.
Yeah.
Are you a watch guy? Because my husband kind of likes watches.
Well, it's so funny you ask that, Alicia.
Because I like that
what
watch.
What a coincidence.
Good Christmas gift?
This is a movement watch. MVMT is the official watch of the Michael Knowles Show. They do a lot of great work at the Daily Wire. And movement watches are, the thing I love about them is I refuse to spend a gazillion dollars on a watch. I will not do it.
And watches can be really expensive.
They can be absurdly expensive. Yeah. To get like one of those really crazy name brands, you're spending 5 figures. You're spending like 10 grand. Even if you go to a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500. Movement watches start at just $95. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middleman and retail markup, providing the best possible price. At such great prices, Movement watches make wonderful holiday gifts too. There's a classic design. I'll take it off. I want to show this to the camera. Classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. And this is the key here. I think this is the reason why I'm so thrilled that Movement is the official watch of the Michael Knowles Show, is that it is almost completely blank. It's really stylish these days. They've sold over 1 million watches in over 160 countries. But here's the thing. You get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movement.com/covfefe.
I love that so much.
That is the promo. That's why. Go get one of these watches. They gave
you
the promo code.
Just so you can use covfefe. The promo.
Come on. You got at least, if you can make it right now without going to mvmt.com/covfefe, COVFEFE, I would be shocked if you can. You got to do it. mvmt.com/COVFEFE, covfefe. This watch makes a really clean design, and it is a great fashion statement. It is time to step up your watch game. People should wear watches. I've lost my ear. People should wear watches because it shows that you've got places to be, places
to go,
things to do.
Without annoyingly checking your iPhone.
It's
way cooler to check a sweet watch
on
your arm.
Like a watch, like an adult, and not just like a child that was born, you know, 5 minutes ago. So go to mvmt.com/covfefe and help us out. They help keep the lights on.
We like people that help keep the lights on.
I certainly
do. Plus, I'm a fan of online shopping, especially with the Christmas season coming up. And I'm hoping that our next episode of The Conversation, people ask Ben tons of Christmas-related questions. Because I'm like, don't you wanna?
Don't you wanna? I know. He celebrates Kwanzaa, I think, right?
Yeah, that's totally what he does.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah, with Sean King.
Yeah.
And Sean King together.
They go over, they decorate their Kwanzaa bush. I don't know.
Are we allowed to say what Ben is doing tomorrow? Because he's, poor guy's on a plane right now.
That is true.
And he can't even defend himself.
Is it? I know. Sad.
Let's just say,
great man. Sad.
Be watching the TVs tomorrow because Ben will be doing some fun stuff on TV. The next question is from Kenneth. He says, okay, Dr. Revlove.
Dr. Reverend
PhD,
Love.
PhD. You've given out some advice in the romance department. What advice do you have on dealing with bad or unhelpful crushes?
Well, I'm a little confused. Do you think he means bad, like you have a crush on someone that you wish you didn't have a crush on? Or like some person has a crush on you and you don't like it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well,
can you give us both answers?
I'll answer both. Obviously, this is a little personal because Marshall, I don't think we're telling tales out of school. My producer, Marshall, has had a weird crush on me for a while now. He's made a lot of unwanted and untoward advances.
Yeah.
The way that I deal with that, you know, you gotta play it straight. If you have someone who has a crush on you and you don't, and you wish that they
didn't. You're not interested.
And you're not interested, then don't be a jerk about it. Don't make them feel bad or anything. Be very straightforward. Be nice to them. Either tell them you're not interested, or, you know, you're dating somebody or you're interested in somebody else. But don't humiliate them, you know, don't. I mean, that's what I do to Marshall, but you shouldn't. You should be better than all of that.
He's a guy, he can handle it though.
He can handle it.
I feel like if it's a girl, you have to let him down a little bit easier.
Yeah, be really, I mean, it's a flattering thing for someone to be interested in you. Uh-huh. It's occasionally a shocking thing, you know, and so you should be nice about it. It's when someone is interested in you, don't.
But what if it's the other way around?
What if you have a crush on someone and you know that you shouldn't?
Yeah.
Yeah, or it's not
That's
going well.
That's more of a moral quandary, isn't it?
Yeah, well, go for it. You
like,
know,
is
listen,
it, is it a...
Lord, make me chaste, but not yet. I mean, there's a time and a place for everything, and that place is college. So, you know, it's certainly fine to play the field and experiment. If you're not getting the right response, though, you got to move on. You can't live forever in your fantasies. Mm-hmm. People will pine away, and they'll say, oh, my gosh, someday this person will like me. It just might not happen. You got to live in reality, because you can't date the person in your imagination. You can only date real people. That's mm-hmm. It's like it's a trick. It's a really harmful delusion to try to date people in your fantasies. So you gotta.
And then you're stuck not like getting out there and having a real life.
Yeah, it's true. And then you won't find your own sweet little Elisa.
So relationship advice, Michael Knowles.
When you deal in reality, the reality can become much better than your fantasies.
Oh.
But you gotta do that.
Put that on a cross stitch and sell it. Mm-hmm. I thought that this next question was for moi, but it is not, because you are known as the man that likes to wear ladies' attire on the office.
I'm trans. I'm a sort of trans.
Some movies and videos and stuff that we do. Uh-huh. So Evan is asking, where do you get your dresses?
I have worn dresses on a lot of Daily Wire productions.
Yes.
I did, I think the first one was Senator Elizabeth Warren. I wore a 12-year-old's Pocahontas dress that I found down the street. Recently, I wore my Moana costume for Halloween, because I was told that was very politically correct. Mm-hmm. That's what I was supposed to wear, is the Moana costume. Mm-hmm. And I did also, as
Game
a leather.
Game of Thrones.
Oh, Game of Thrones.
Let's not forget.
You know what's fine? I don't even watch Game of Thrones.
You were the nude pregnant woman.
I was. There wasn't really so much a dress there as too much chest hair and a wig. And then I was 11. In the recent Stranger Things video that we did. I think the answer on all of them is I go to the Halloween costume store down the street, and because I don't plan anything in advance, for all of these occasions, I've had to get the leftovers. So
you spend an outrageous amount of money on the leftovers.
It is insane. Those Halloween dresses are absurdly priced, and all the leftovers are for like 10-year-olds. So, you know, I'm not as svelte as I once was.
Uh-huh.
I'm, you know, there's a little bit more cushion these days. And so, unfortunately, that is the answer. I just wear... they're all for like 10 or 12 year olds and at the Halloween store down the street.
A little behind the scenes, my daughter came in on Halloween and she saw the Moana costume hanging up in hair and makeup, and she was like, Mom, there's other kids here?
Yeah,
and I was like, no, my child.
A very big Italian
just
kid.
Just Michael.
A unfortunately hairy big kid. And we were matching for Halloween, me and your daughter.
She was not Moana. I mean, she has the costume, but she was Goldilocks. Anyway, Jeffrey is asking, what's with the set design? It looks like a mix between a barn and a prison cell.
Well, as you know, you're coming here, too, from this hostage situation.
Yeah.
We are in the cellar of the Ben Shapiro show. Which is very nice. You know, listen, if you're in the leftovers of the Ben Shapiro show, still pretty good digs, but yeah, uh-huh. They do lock me in here, usually chain me up except for when the camera's on. And the thing I do like about it, though, is it reminds me of New York. I'm from New York. I've lived in New York most of my life.
I get that kind of like gritty, like things are always under construction.
Yeah.
There's even rats here.
There are definitely rats here, yeah. We're just running around. Some of them we employ. And here, you know, when you live in New York, you're living in misery, basically. You're paying... all of your money. You're paying more money than you have to live in a place. My first bedroom in New York was 7 by 10. It was 70 square feet. There was one wall was artificial. There were no windows. I had to put the bed in first before we built the wall. And
I had one of those rooms.
Yeah, it's just awful. And you know, it smells of garbage. Every day is garbage day in Lower New York, but it's still the best. There's a reason people pay for it.
My memories of New York are much more romantical than yours.
Yeah, I guess so. I might have lived on different sides of town. Uptown girl, downtown man.
I think I lived in every single neighborhood in Manhattan.
Really?
Yeah. Ben also hates New York City, though.
I love it. This is very often the difference between Ben's take and my take, or Ben's take and Drew's take.
Despite all of that, you still love it?
Despite the constant negative fresco fefe. Like, we'll say the same exact sentences, like, Trump did this and Trump did that, and everyone's doing this, and this is the reaction. Isn't it great? That's usually my reaction. That's not Ben's reaction.
That's not Ben's reaction at all. Okay, next question. We got a next question, hopefully.
It disappeared.
Oh, no. Where'd it go? Well, this is a good time. I think it was about Roy Moore. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the person that was asking it. But do you think that Roy Moore should step down at this point? Ben said as much in his show this morning. He's a little perturbed at Jeff Flake, of course.
Sure. It's hard to imagine that he can win this race. I mean, the Gloria Allred interview was so devastating.
The press conference yesterday.
His only saving grace is that Gloria Allred did it, and she's so detestable.
I know,
detestable,
Michael, but you watch that poor woman.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And she reminds me of every woman. I'm from Oklahoma, and she reminds me of every woman, like, at my parents' church.
I know. I've met a lot of women who are similar to that on the campaign trail. So there's basically no answer. Mm-hmm. If he drops out, the Republicans lose. Mm-hmm. If he stays in, almost certainly the Republicans lose. Mm-hmm. They can try to do a writing campaign that has worked on very few occasions in American politics. He's done, right? It just seems like he's done. And it's worth pointing. So I guess jump out, stay in, whatever. It's going to be the same. It's going to be the same conclusion either way. One interesting aspect of this is that everyone said Roy Moore is the Trumpier candidate. Hmm. He certainly seemed like the Trumpier candidate. You know, the cultural warrior, made sure that he didn't allow for judicial supremacy when it came to that Ten Commandments monument at the Alabama courthouse.
I mean, that was years ago.
That's like what made his name, right? And alas, Trump supported the other guy, this guy Luther Strange, and it's a real failure of the Strange campaign that they didn't dig up this dirt and force him out of the primary. But
come on, you and I both know that if the Strange campaign had dug up this dirt during the primary, Bannon et al. Would have said,
it's fake news or whatever.
Fake news.
Yeah, but he would have lost the primary. He would have lost. I mean, sure, Bannon would have maybe stood by him, perhaps, but it would have been good dirt. It's a real failure of the Strange campaign not to have found it. So that's, unless all of these accusations are fictional, and it's very hard for me to believe that they're fictional, mm-hmm. there's a lot of good evidence that he did these things, mm-hmm. then it's a total failure of Luther Strange. It's really upsetting. And we're just basically in a no-win situation. I would be very surprised if Moore wins that race. I suppose crazier things have happened in recent politics, but it seems to me, stay out, or jump out, stay in. It's probably going to be the same conclusion.
So to ask questions, because we're getting lots of questions, and some people are trying to ask questions on Facebook or Twitter, and that won't work, guys, because you have to be a subscriber. Log into dailywire.com to watch the live stream and head over to the conversation page. And after that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box, where we will pull your live questions as they come in, and then I'll be asking them of Michael. And on Tuesday, December 12th, we'll be hosting our fourth episode of The Conversation. I'll be talking to Ben Shapiro again, and it's hosted by moi. Oh, Sean Spicer's here.
Hey, good.
He has a question.
Hey, pal.
He says, hi, Michael. What's the appeal of Ayn Rand's objectivism appeal to so many conservatives? I find it repellent, sort of libertarianism with no soul or conscience. What are your thoughts?
Libertarianism with no soul or conscience, but you repeat yourself. No, I'm kidding. That's not true. Yeah, well, everyone was 17 once, I guess, is the answer on Ayn Rand and objectivism. I remember, this happened to me. I remember I read The Virtue of Selfishness and I think The Fountainhead. I tried to read Atlas Shrugged, and I prefer
The Fountainhead to Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, I'm on my 15th year of trying to read Atlas Shrugged. I can't get through it.
And, I mean, it wasn't required reading at Yale?
or in New York public schools, yeah. Well, the nice thing about it is that when you're a 17-year-old guy, you have a lot of hormones going through you. You feel that you're really smart, even though you don't know anything at all. There's a rebellion, usually, against mm-hmm. traditional religion, at least where I come from. And so you think, yeah, I can get into this. This is cool. This is sexy. There's a virtue in selfishness. Mm-hmm. And some of it is true. So Ayn Rand obviously identifies a real problem. She's reacting to communism. She's reacting to collectivism and socialism. And so she makes a number of very true points. The trouble is that her first principles are not true. And when you ground the right in atheism, you can get some pretty ugly results mm-hmm. when you take away the moral foundations of it and you deny a basic reality, such as the existence of God or where all of the values and moral underpinnings of Western civilization come from, then you deny a basic reality that adheres in conservatism mm-hmm. and in more coherent conservatisms. So it ends up being pretty ugly. That's why Bill Buckley didn't take her seriously mm-hmm. when she came out when he was running National Review. And I say, enjoy it. We're all kids. It's good to play along in that, but you should move on to more serious pastures. Another aspect of Ayn Rand is that it's very clear. It's a very clear political philosophy. Mm-hmm. So it's good to be selfish. It's not communism. Good to be selfish. You do you. But shallows are clear. Shallow things are clear. And, profound things, I think, they're a little murkier and they're a little more opaque, and they require you to think more and read more and follow your own ideas to their logical conclusions.
Good answer. Mendel is asking, is there a Republican you would rather vote for in 2020 over Donald Trump?
I think Trump is doing a good job. I suppose that puts me in the minority of certain sophisticated Republican and conservative mm-hmm. circles. But I think he's doing a pretty good job. We've got a lot of great conservative policy that has come out of this administration, tremendous judicial nominees, not just Gorsuch, but a lot of appellate judges, and a lot who have been nominated who are awaiting confirmation. And so in foreign policy, he's handled things very well, much better than his predecessor. Mm-hmm. He's shown a lot of sophistication there. And the direction of the administration is pretty good. There was a worry that he would be Hitler or something. We didn't know who he was. We didn't know where the administration was going to lead. And those fears have been assuaged. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't happened. So I'm pleased with him. That said, he wasn't my choice in the primary. I didn't.
Who was your choice? I don't think I know that.
I was a Cruz guy. I did a TV commercial for Cruz, actually.
You did?
Believe it or not.
Wait,
yeah.
Which one?
You can dig that up. Well,
was it the one with a former porn star?
Not that one. That written by Andrew Klavan. No, not that one. I did one called War Room,
uh-huh.
and it's this thing was released the day that Prince died. So we had all of the headlines and all the TV stations for 45 minutes, and then Prince died, and it fell apart. A good analogy for the Cruz campaign. And so, yeah, Trump wasn't my first choice. I could name a lot of Republicans. I loved Mitch Daniels in 2012. I really hoped he would run.
Really?
I thought he was an excellent, he's best governor in America, a conservative down the line, socially, fiscally, really smart, really sophisticated. And he didn't run, so I don't know. My preferred candidates don't always get in there, but I've been very pleasantly surprised with Trump. And if the 2020 campaign were today, I would certainly support him for re-election.
Roger says, hello, Michael. You and Andrew have great show intros. How come Ben's is so boring?
That is a great, Ben speaks at a rate that is about 7 times faster than the rate that I speak uh-huh. or that Drew speaks to. He condenses all of it. And I think the reason maybe that Ben's is more boring is he doesn't want to deal with it. Get the intro
out
of here. Get out of the way.
I need to start.
Talk
right
a
now.
Mile a minute for yeah. the next 45 minutes. I don't want that many guests. I've got to just inject you with the facts as I see them.
The Shapiro's here.
And I think that's what it is. Whereas Drew and I, we relax a little more. We smell the roses a little bit more, maybe. So we have these really fun intros.
That's the proper word. You pause.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no pausing.
They are fun. I really love my intro. Drew's intro is the greatest talk show intro in maybe the history of television. And I voice one of the characters, by the way.
Really?
It's up to you to figure out which one it is.
Oh, maybe you can ask that on the next conversation with Michael Knowles. Michael says, hi, Michael. Where did you find the tabloid-style stories about Alexander Hamilton and other historic Americans that you shared on the Andrew Klavan show yesterday? I want to read more of them. Thank you.
It is great. There's this feeling in politics that Trump has degraded us because he said, uncouth things to Billy Bush on a bus. Billy Bush
say
on
that
a
five
bus.
Times fast.
Sally sold seashells. And, all of these sex scandals are always coming out. We've seen them in recent history with Bill Clinton and Denny Hastert and yada, 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 Mark Foley. And what we need to remember is that politics isn't new. We didn't invent politics. We didn't invent sex, believe it or not. Sex has been around for a long time, too. It's the oldest profession, and politics is the second oldest profession. And Ronald Reagan said it, you know, politics bears a lot of similarity to the first, which is prostitution.
Selling yourself.
Selling yourself for sex. And so if you just Google them, you'll find all of these things. But I think there are even like Wikipedia pages about it. There are a few good books about it. The names escape me at the moment. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites, Alexander Hamilton initiated our nation's first sex scandal in 1791 when he cuckolded a man by the name, I believe, of James Reynolds. And little did he know, Reynolds knew about it and extorted Hamilton for $1,000. It came out 6 years later in 1797. They tried to use the cuckoldry to tie him to a financial scandal, and so Hamilton copped to the sex in a way to avoid the financial scandal. It hurt his career, and John Adams said something, I'm misquoting slightly, but he said, that bastard brat of a Scottish peddler, his ambition comes, I think, from a superabundance of secretions which there are not enough whores in Philadelphia to absorb. So this sort of rhetoric has been around for a long time, and so I don't worry too much.
I don't think Lin-Manuel Miranda included that in the play, though.
It wasn't in the play, and you know, compared to...
I mean, it gives a whole new perspective to not throwing away my shot.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. But it does, really, you know, when you look at the Access Hollywood tape, you think, man, talk to John Adams. He'll make that language much more sophisticated.
Okay. Well, we'll see about that. Jimmy says, aloha, Michael Knowles. I'm assuming Jimmy is in Hawaii, and if so, can we say mele kalikimaka, or is it too soon for
That's
that?
That's the thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day.
So, if the White House offered you a choice to spend the day with one of the Trumps, who would it be and why?
Well, I'm going to get in trouble with sweet little Lisa.
I knew this.
So, I'm going to say Donald. I'm going to say Donald. That's the safe answer.
But was it Melania or Ivanka?
Well, yeah. I mean, six of one, half a dozen of the other, right? It'd be hard. Do I have to choose just one? Donald Trump is... I had the opportunity to meet him through a group that I was in, to attend a lecture, have a dinner. And I didn't do it because I didn't take his candidacy seriously. I didn't think he was a serious candidate. I thought he was running for publicity or for his business or whatever. And... I've gotten a lot of respect for his ability to navigate the political media in the last couple of years, as have we all. Mm-hmm. I think one guy who understood Trump and Trump's aesthetics and what he was doing, that when very few people did, is Scott Adams, the Dilbert guy, mm-hmm. the Dilbert cartoonist. He's given a lot of interviews. He's written a book about it, about Trump's art of persuasion, about his almost hypnotism, of how you haven't had a meal with somebody in the last 2 years where Trump didn't come up. He just is a cultural mastermind, a cultural maven. And so I would like to observe it. I wouldn't want to talk to him about it. I don't know that he's conscious about it. But there's this at least a visceral aspect to him. Not to hyperbolize too much, but it reminds me a little bit of what Owen Barfield writes about in this book, Poetic Diction. Owen Barfield is one of the guys who brought C.S. Lewis to Christianity. He was an Inkling. And he talks about how in early man, in pre-self-conscious man, language is poetry, and the myths are the emanation of that poetry. And as languages evolve and consciousness evolves, the poetry and the criticism diverge. So you have these brilliant critics mm-hmm. who can write about what the poetry is, but they can't produce the poetry. Mm. And the language does that itself. And Trump is all poet, baby. Make America great again. I'm only half kidding. He is a real poet, especially at the medium of Twitter. He understands how to manipulate language to produce images and to produce visceral reactions. And I'd love to see it in action. I'd love to watch it. Not to talk about it, but to actually watch
it. Shadow him for the day.
Yeah, but I should love to shadow him and just see what he is doing that literally nobody else in politics figured out in the modern era until him.
Jeremiah says, Dear Mr. Michael Knowles, when are you going to finally settle up and marry sweet little Louisa?
It's coming soon. This was a really strange thing. I'm getting married in June, and I... can't wait. We've been doing wedding planning forever. Mm-hmm. Apparently those things are complicated. And this was divine. We knew that sweet little Lisa was an angel sent by God, but this was a divine thing. We had dated, you know, we were high school sweethearts. We split for college, got back together, but you know, it was this long-standing thing. Mm-hmm. And I finally proposed in February. And 2 weeks later, a blank sheet of paper, a blank stack of paper, got me a lot of money and attention and paid for my wedding and paid for my future, you know.
Future it, children,
yeah,
my, Catholic schooling.
Is going to put little, little Michael Jr. through private school or something. And it was, the night before I proposed, I had a cigar at Drew's house. And we went out. It had been raining in LA, which itself is a miracle. Mm-hmm. It never happens.
We had a very wet winter last year.
Very wet winter, yeah. And you know,
it ended that 7-year drought. But you know, Jerry Brown hasn't changed our water prices
certainly
yet.
Certainly not. And Jerry Falwell Jr. at Trump's inauguration said, "Water is a sign of blessing." In the Bible, is used as a sign of mm-hmm. blessing. And so I took that as an interesting
like
sign.
Like a sign.
It rains in LA.
Yep.
And so we went out to the back cigar patio. We don't usually use at Drew's. And he said, "Oh, look at that." And it was the most vivid double rainbow I've ever seen in my life. And so I know that God won't flood my marriage, you know, won't destroy my marriage in a flood. But it also, he did turn to me and said, "You know, this is probably a good sign, pal. And it's an evil generation that looks for signs and wonders, but it's a stupid generation that ignores signs and wonders." And so clearly the timing was coincidental and probably providential. And so it'll happen in June, a year and a half after I proposed.
In June, you'll make her an honest woman?
Yeah, okay. She'll make me an honest man.
That's more likely.
Maybe. That's an uphill battle.
She'll try. Sean Walker says, "Yo, Michael, is Hillary really your cousin?"
I love that this is true. I didn't know this until I was talking to my grandfather. Turns out that on my paternal grandfather's maternal side, on his mother's side, that's the Gao family, and somewhere down the Gows, they married a Rodham, one of Hillary's first cousins. This is not as distant as you would think. My aunt attended the Gao family reunion last year. There were Rodhams there.
Yeah.
She brought a copy of my blank book, Reasons to Vote for Democrats, A Comprehensive Guide. They would not speak to her.
Really?
The Rodhams would not speak to the Knowleses at the Gao family reunion because...
Of
me. I caused a rift in my family. So I've been trying
but
to
no
do the
But no
Rodhams numbers.
Will be attending the wedding nuptials.
Well, I'll certainly invite them, you know. I was hoping the Clinton Foundation would pay for it. They've got a lot of cash running around there. I could sure use the help. But I assume they won't be making it to the wedding. And I haven't figured out exactly what, but I think it's third cousin once removed is what Hillary is. Obviously, it's hard to tell her age because she was created before the creation, you know, and she fell like lightning from heaven. So we can't date it in our chronology, mm-hmm. but I think that would make her my third cousin once removed.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Next question. Jeff says, "Michael, since you are the most articulate human being on the planet, can you please provide the correct pronunciation for how now brown cow?"
That is high praise. How now brown cow? Sit on a potato pan or to sit on a potato pan. You know New York. You need New York. You know you need unique New York. You know, I actually, the other day, Candace Owens, who is Red Pill Black on YouTube, she came in here. And I hadn't met her in person. I just talked to her on the show on the Skype. And I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And she said, "Oh my gosh, you actually sound like that." And it had never occurred to me that I have a strange sounding voice.
You have a unique voice.
But I think it's because I went to a lot of acting schools. So I went to the Stella Adler School.
Your enunciation and Yale, and your pronunciation.
Yeah, you learn diction and articulation. And I guess I do that just from all the years of schooling. Mm-hmm. But it makes me sound like, you know, like a... Like I, when I talk to Dennis Prager, sometimes I've had a cigar with Prager, you know Prager. He is a radio show. Uh-huh. He is a walking radio show. He's always an amazing conversationalist.
Yes. Act happy, be happy.
He's just amazing at it, yeah.
And so I'm awful at that.
If I can lean into Dennis, that would be, you know, like subscribe, you know, then that would be a great achievement.
Rosemary wants to know, what do you want for Christmas?
All I want for Christmas is you. Like that song. No, I don't know. Hey, Rosemary, thank you for the question. I don't know. I sort of feel like I have everything. Like, I don't have that much money or stuff, but I don't need it. What do I need? I don't need anything at all.
I mean, 2018 is going to be really exciting for you.
It's a big year, yeah. I even think with the wedding registry, like, I don't need all this stuff right now. I mean, money's good. I wouldn't mind money. That's always fine because happiness can't buy money.
You want people to subscribe to the Daily Wire.
This is what I actually want for Christmas. Obviously, subscribe to the Daily Wire. That way you get your leftist tears tumbler.
And it keeps you employed.
It certainly keeps me employed. I mean, employment is a nice thing for Christmas.
We all know that Ben is looking for an excuse to fire you.
He's been chomping at the bit. He has been salivating for a long time. But what I want for Christmas is for you. I want to pass it forward. I want to pay it forward.
Okay.
I want you to give a Christmas gift to a Democrat that you love, that you know that you love. And I want that Christmas gift to be Reasons to Vote for Democrats, a comprehensive guide, because there's so much to it. You'll bring joy to them. You thought to buy them a present. You'll educate them. They'll learn so much. You can't take away someone's education. That's a gift for a lifetime. And I think they'll learn a lot. I think it'll be edifying for everybody. Really charitable. So that's what I want for Christmas, is I want you to give that book to everybody.
And speaking of the book, mm-hmm. Jacob wants to know, when will you write a sequel to your book?
Write a sequel is a difficult phrase to parse.
And by write, the only part you would be writing is the title.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, so tough.
Well, I can't write a sequel. I guess I could publish a sequel because I didn't write a book, uh-huh. but I did publish a book. I actually, as part of my deal with the book, I self-published it and then I signed and sold it to Threshold Editions of Simon & Schuster. But I do have to write a book. That's part of it, which is kind of funny. You would think.
Oh, you do?
I do have to write one, so I'm considering some ideas.
How do they even
right
know
now.
That you're good at it?
I don't know. It doesn't
sorry,
matter.
But like typically, a publicist looks at your first yeah. book to kind of determine going forward.
Well, brevity is the soul of wit.
True.
So I used an economy of words in my book. Uh-huh. And the other thing is, nobody reads books anymore, you know? And so, you know, it's okay. They'll get it. Hopefully, it has a nice cover design. But there have been a few ideas I've been kicking around. I'm working on a book. Proposal right now to when I finalize the proposal, I'll let you know what the book is.
But it won't necessarily be a sequel to your first publishing.
No, but it is variations on a theme. So
okay.
I think the audience of my first best-selling political tome, a book that President Trump said, yeah, you know, he said it's a great book for your reading enjoyment. I think he will enjoy the next book just as much, and I hope you will too.
So the next edition of the conversation is mm-hmm. going to be really fun. I mean, this has been our third one. We'd had Ben, and then Andrew, and then you.
Little old me.
And then we'll be doing Ben again on Tuesday, December 12th, and I'll be hosting again. It's going to be the fourth episode of The Conversation with our very own Ben Shapiro, hosted by me. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they really can't
that's
get anybody else to deal with these guys. They're like, who will handle them? We'll try Alicia. We'll see how long I last. I don't know. To ask questions as a subscriber, you can log into dailywire.com to watch the live stream and head over to the conversation page. After that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box where we will pull your live questions as they come in. We have our producers here working really hard at that. And we have our next question. Mm-hmm. Samuel wants to know, what would be your advice to a high school student who wants to get into the media business?
Don't write a book. Don't write a book is the way to do it. I've found that has been a very effective way to get into it. What you should do, if you want to get into media, I assume you mean as a contributor of content, as a writer or mm-hmm. a speaker or something. If you want to get into the corporate side, I have no idea. You know, do well in school and go work at a bank or something, and you'll have a good resume to get into that. But to do the content side of it, I think you ought to throw spaghetti at the wall. I've had a pretty strange year in my mm-hmm. media experience, and a lot of people I know who have gotten into politics or political media or whatever have done it in a way that they didn't quite plan. It just happened mm-hmm. various ways. And one way you can do that is throw spaghetti at the wall. You need to be prepared for an opportunity to come. So since high school, I told you I've been to a lot of acting schools. That's good preparation for media mm-hmm. of any sort. And I always was writing, so I'd write for various publications. Now I write for the Daily Wire, but I wrote for a lot before that. School papers, Economic Review, this, that, and the other thing. And I was running campaigns, so I was working on political campaigns. That's the best experience, by the way. It is. You've worked campaigns
yeah.
before. Congressional campaigns really will teach you a lot about politics, your government, media, the human condition. It'll scare you away from running
depression,
for office.
Depression, anxiety, yeah. junk
poverty.
Food.
Yeah, yeah. And really teaches you a lot, though. So then I formed a little political shop during college, and we were mm-hmm. running campaigns and still do that. That is called Red Pillar Consulting. It still exists. I get a kick out of it. It's Red Pillar, P-I-L-L-A-R. Uh-huh. But these days, people use the phrase red pill to like become a conservative.
Yeah.
So I like now that we're the red pillars, you know, we're red pilling people. But just do all of that. And then when an opportunity presents itself, you can't decide when an opportunity is going to present itself.
Yeah.
But when it does, you'll be ready to do it. So just get really good at it. Read a lot of books. First of all, read a lot of books. Know what you're doing. There are some people, I won't name names, who have fizzled out or blown up in politics and media mm-hmm. and they weren't ready for it because they didn't really know what they thought. And
you have to have a core.
Yeah, and you got to know what you think. Like, it's got to be a real pity to get any fame or notoriety before you know what you think. So make sure you know what you think. Read a lot of books, especially if it's in political media. Read the classics, Aristotle, Cicero, you know, the real classics, and classics of literature, and modern political classics like Reflections on the Revolution in France, or Michael Oakeshott, or Russell Kirk, or Buckley, or whatever. Make sure you know that before you just start spouting nonsense. I'll say this from a lot of experience. Brevity is the soul of wit. Use an economy of words, sometimes no words, but make sure that when you're presenting some information, it's adding value to the people who are watching you. The opinions are a dime a dozen, but if you can give some facts, give some historical context, I think people appreciate that and they'll have you back.
Crispin wants to know, what are your thoughts on gathering yourself and like-minded individuals and shipping off to your own plot of land free of the ethnicity diversity as opposed to expecting the greater majority to go?
Free of the ethnicity...
Diverse?
As opposed
to, I thought it was diversity.
As opposed to expecting the greater majority to go. I don't know exactly what that question is asking.
I don't either.
I have often thought about shipping off. I have often.
Some friends and I mean, hey, if we could be Richard Branson style and buy an island and just like bunker down.
I thought he was going Richard Spencer style and asking if all the people of one ethnicity go somewhere. I mean, there is always. Conservatives are conspiracy minded because we don't trust the government. Mm-hmm. So we're always waiting for the government to come and destroy us and take our freedom. So it's always good to have a way to get out of town, get out of Dodge, even before it's too late. But I would not, in any version of this question that I can understand, I wouldn't want to remove myself from society, neither as a conservative, nor as a survivalist, nor as Rod Dreher, an Orthodox Christian, proposed the Benedict option for Christians to remove themselves from society because it's so tawdry and awful now. I don't want to do any of that. I like society. I like people. I'd much rather be in the thick of it and have to talk to crazy lefties and have them yell at me all day long and then remove myself and say, isn't this nice? Politics is about people. You know, it's how people interact in society and civilization. Hmm. And I like people. I don't mind if that comes with a lot of annoyances and tedia and whatever. I think conservatives should be in the world. We should be making culture. We should be making politics and not isolating or othering ourselves.
Connor asks, this is a really good question, Connor. Who do you think will be the Democrat nominees for president in 2020?
It's got to be Bernie and Bernie's father, right? Or some, I don't know, the party of the youth has got
to nominate a 100-year-old. What about Joe Biden, though? I mean, he's been out in the news recently.
They're all so old.
Of course, he's pushing a book.
It's just amazing how old they are. Biden is making,
appearing
like he'd run.
What about the up-and-comers? I mean, I agree with that. Like, Biden is old, Bernie is old, Elizabeth Warren is old.
Yeah.
But you also have the Kamala Harris's and the Cory Booker's.
I guess. I would be surprised if Cory Booker could survive in his party right now, because Cory Booker is much more reasonable than his party. So I don't really see the Democrats moving center or moving right after Hillary Clinton. I think they're going to double down. I think they're going to they're going to go full Mondale or something. They're going to push it far left. So Kamala Harris is the consensus view right now. I think that's what people are waiting for. But it's so early. I don't know that we could pick it. Would you have said Donald Trump in 2012? Certainly not.
I know, but I think for the Democratic side, it's almost more predictable. I mean, everybody knew Hillary Clinton 2016.
Yeah, it's predictable because it's Hillary. But would anyone have thought that Obama would have beaten Hillary in 2008?
Oh. I worked for Sean Hannity, and we had Stop Hillary Express bumper stickers we were selling.
Absolutely. And I'd love some extras if they're lying around. I still like
them. I have a mug somewhere if you really want it.
It's got to be Hillary, right? It's going to be the once in future, the former future president, rather. And I just think it's too early to worry about those things. The only prediction I'll make is they'll nominate someone pretty far left. I don't think they're going to learn their lesson. They should learn their lesson and nominate someone who's more central, but I don't think it'll happen.
Rosemary wants to know, what is your whiskey or bourbon of choice?
I prefer Scotch whiskey. It's my favorite kind of whiskey. And after that, I like rye whiskey. And only after that do I like bourbon. Of the Scotches, I love Lagavulin. I like Macallan 12. That's the Andrew Clavin Scotch.
Okay.
So whenever I go to his house, that's all we drink. My go-to is Johnny Black. I like Johnny Black with a cigar or something like that. And it's very fashionable now among people in the millennial generation to drink just the peatiest scotches imaginable. So Lafroig or Oban, they just punch you in the face with peat, you know. I like that too. That's also pretty good. But that's what I go to. For cocktails, I like rye. Mm-hmm. So I'll usually have a rye Manhattan or a rye Old Fashioned. And but again, that's only for breakfast. You know, when it gets later in the day, I'll go for something a little fuller,
breakfast
like
cigar, yeah. And Old Fashioned.
Oh yeah,
but and then you move along to.
Then you move. You know, Winston Churchill had a glass of wine in the morning. The Queen has five cocktails a day.
Me and the Queen need to meet because that woman has my drinks: champagne, dirty martinis.
Oh yeah,
and gin and tonic.
G and T.
I'm like, that's
every day.
My girl. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. So you know, I do like that idea. And I would like to resurrect the martini for men. I think the martini gets a bad rap because of like the apple tea.
I once had a bartender tell me even a dirty martini is a very girly drink.
That's what they say. It's effeminate. I don't know.
It's an effeminate way to drink vodka.
There's a great club that I go to in New York that use their house.
Is it New York's hottest club though?
It is really hot. No, it's definitely not hot. And they serve their house martini, which is just two martinis. It's just a martini with a little blue cheese olive and then a second one on the side in the carafe. And that's a pretty manly drink. You start out with two martinis. It's a good stiff drink.
Yeah. It should last you the rest of the night,
too. It should last you the rest of the hour, yeah.
Sean Walker says, what's new with you in general?
Not that much, man. What's new with you? What's going on with you?
What's going on, Sean?
I don't know. I'm doing the conversation. I'm here with Alicia. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that.
He's forced to do this.
I got to do this, yeah.
He'd rather not be sitting here with me.
No, there isn't too much that's new. Other than I was invited to give a speech at a college. I can't say where it is.
Will there be protests?
I am praying that they're going to. I can't wait for the protests.
You can't say where it is, but can we narrow it down to a state?
It's in New York.
Okay.
We're still putting the details together. It's in New York. So I'm excited for this. Mm-hmm. Shapiro has so much fun doing these. He obviously, you know, they had to shut down the city of Berkeley, declare a state of national emergency.
He was at UCLA last night.
Yeah. So it looks like a ton of fun. I don't know, I'm probably going to have to wear like Kevlar and drive in a tank, but it seems great. So I'm pretty excited for that. If there are more colleges, I'll let you know and we can, you know. Hopefully people can come to it.
To do a college tour, that'd be lots of fun.
Yeah.
Don't forget, guys, if you're trying to ask questions, you have to be a subscriber. So be sure to go to dailywire.com to watch this live stream. Head over to the conversation page. And after that, just start typing into the Daily Wire chat box. And that's where our producers here are going to be pulling your questions. They are pulling your questions live as they come in. Tommy, and I kind of feel sorry for him. We were actually talking about this in the office yesterday. Last name withheld.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Because Tommy's probably afraid of being outed as a Michael Knowles fan or a Daily Wire subscriber.
Yeah.
He's asking, what are the best movies you have seen this year?
You know, I kind of forget which movies were this year and which movies were last year because there haven't been a lot of great movies this year. Hmm. I did go, this is going to be unpopular, I did enjoy Mother by Aronofsky.
Really?
Everett conservatives lambasted this thing. They said it was an environmental screed. Aronofsky himself might have intended for it to be an environmental screed. I don't think it was. I think it was a Miltonian allegory. It was clearly a Christian allegory, and I think that the movie doesn't really make sense if, what's that girl's name?
Jennifer Lawrence,
if Jennifer Lawrence is Mother Earth, which is what everyone was suggesting, I don't think the movie makes sense that way. I think Jennifer Lawrence is Satan. She's a satanic character. The movie is told from her point of view. She might view herself as very good and lovely, but I don't think her character, when viewed objectively, represents that. And so I really enjoyed that. My favorite movie of the last 5 years was Hail Caesar, that Coen Brothers movie that came out of those.
I never saw it.
It's like the most conservative Christian movie of the last 10 years that nobody saw, but you should all go see that. That was really good. I finally saw Logan. Logan is tremendous. I hate superhero movies. I detest them. I just used to like them.
How dare you?
I know, they're just so good. Like, come on, man. Are there any movies for adults that are being made at all?
But sometimes I just want to go watch like a superhero movie and not have to be a deep thinker. Like, I don't want to go see a movie like Mother and have to be like, what is the meaning of this?
I'll go see John Wick or something. That's fine. But all of the colors and all, you know, I don't know. I can't. I liked childhood, but I don't want to see superhero movies, except for Logan. Logan was so tremendously good. And So those were all good movies. Hollywood right now is a little in the dumps. It hasn't been excellent. There, those $30, $40 million movies for adults don't really exist anymore.
It'll be interesting to see if they can kind of get themselves out of the ditch, too, with the Christmas opening.
Oh, yeah. You know? There is a good Italian movie that came out called La Grande Bellezza, which I really enjoyed. All the movies I've seen this year I've been watching on Netflix. I watched The Searchers by John Ford, John Wayne movie. You know, I don't know. In times when Hollywood is producing tripe, go watch. There are plenty of good old movies.
There's the classic section there.
That's right.
So we only have a few minutes left, guys. So if you haven't logged into dailywire.com, become a subscriber so you can ask a question, then you better get rolling. Go over there right now. The next question is from Brandon. Sorry. Between Ben Sass, Ted Cruz, or Marco Rubio, who do you think has a better chance of getting the 2020 GOP nomination should Trump not seek a second term?
Would 10 be a smaller number than 4 if it were colored purple? I think that question has the same sensical value as this question that Brandon just asked.
Okay.
Because I think
I almost thought I was having a stroke, yeah. And I was like, what is Michael talking about?
Yeah, I think he's going to seek another term. I don't think there's anything Donald Trump has done in his life that would make you think he's not going to seek another term. It is too bad because we had this great bench of guys, Rubio and Cruz and all of that. Mm-hmm. But Donald Trump has changed something fundamental in political media, which is that in the old days, I recently watched this press conference from Paul Ryan talking about tax reform. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of tax reform. I generally like Paul Ryan. But the way he was speaking was the way that politicians spoke before Trump, which is, you know, he told a joke about how the cell phone bill, mm-hmm. some of the savings would be as much as your child's cell phone bill, unless they use too much data, and then you chuckle politely, but no one thinks that's funny, right? It's not actually funny. And then Trump comes in, and Trump is actually funny. He is a TV personality and a comedian, and the way he speaks is very direct. He doesn't speak in a pretty way. He speaks like a New Yorker speaks, basically. And none of the candidates in 2016, other than Trump, mm-hmm. were able to do that. Even Chris Christie, in his performed New York, New Jersey speaking, seemed contrived compared to Donald Trump, who apparently had no filter.
Do you think Chris Christie secretly hates Donald?
Well, you saw the hostage video, yeah, certainly.
I mean, because he was kind of that obnoxious East Coast person in the GOP lineup, and then Donald just came in and plowed him over.
Absolutely, because he didn't have the ethos. Like, in a very basic way, political rhetoric has to have the logos, the pathos, and the ethos, right? It's got to have the feeling part, and it's got to have the credibility part, the spirited part, and it's got to have the logical arguments. And some might suggest that President Trump lacked on the latter, though I'm not sure that that's true. But he clearly made up for it on those former two, on the ethos and the pathos. And you just didn't see that from the other candidates, including Chris Christie. Mm-hmm. Even his brashness often came off as disingenuous. Hmm.
Evan Stanley wants to know, why does cultural appropriation only apply to non-Western cultures?
That's a great question, because it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's this double-edged sword. Either you are, you know, if you serve Mexican food, you say, well, you're appropriating Mexican culture. How dare a white chef serve Mexican food? And if you don't serve Mexican food, you're a chauvinist. You're a Western chauvinist who refuses to indulge and experience other people's cultures. So it's just a cudgel that they smack us with and hit us over the head with. But there's nothing wrong with cultural appropriation. It's a key aspect, a central aspect of the West to enjoy other people's cultures. I like to go over and eat Indian food. I've traveled somewhat extensively, and I always enjoy that. And you don't need to do it like the lefties do, and they go over and they say, oh, wow, these people who are living in utter poverty somewhere, they really have it right. People who haven't invented major cities and industries, who are living alone in nature or something, they have the right idea. And they don't even need air conditioners. They don't even need modern medicine that helps them live longer. Mm-hmm. They can just die out, right? It's so natural enough. You don't need to do that. You say, oh, it's very nice. I like this aspect of the culture. I like this food. I like this music. But I also appreciate that it is only my culture which gives me the ability to travel and be a tourist and understand these things in light of the greatest culture and civilization in the history of the world.
I could really do without the air conditioning right now, though. It's freezing.
It is freezing in here.
Oh my gosh.
We don't even need it. We don't even need it, man.
Bob Drews asks, what is your opinion on a
I think it means distributivist, but distributist.
Okay, that's what I thought. Political economic system, is it self-defeating or is it possible?
So distributism is the economic model and political model that was embraced by some Catholic conservative types like G.K. Chesterton famously wrote about distributism. There's a lot to be said for it because they say, well, unbridled capitalism, the Gilded Age sort of capitalism leads to massive inequalities and that isn't good or there's nothing terribly Christian about all of that. I don't think that's where the conversation needs to be right now. I don't think we need to worry about distributism or mass disparities of wealth. The attack right now is on capitalism. We from the right do not need to attack capitalism. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any worry about excessive capitalism, excessive freedom at the moment, if there ever was. So I wouldn't worry about it. It's interesting to read. It's quite interesting to read because you're reading economics through a moral lens, a distinctly, often Catholic lens. Mm-hmm. The critiques that we hear, not quite from Pope Francis, but from Pope Benedict XVI or Pope John Paul II, critiques of capitalism that are not leftist critiques. They're through a particular social and Christian lens. Wonderful to consider that politics exists in time and space, economics exists in time and space, and where we are right now in the United States, I don't think we need to be attacking it from the right.
We need more of it, not less.
Need more freedom, baby, more capitalism.
Drew Fagan is asking, is there a way to debate with nonsensical leftists who will hound you for having different beliefs, or should we not even bother?
Yeah, I love it. I don't know why people, they get angry. Now, mostly people on the left are the ones who unfriend you on Facebook. Yesterday, Sean King blocked me. He asked me a question. I politely responded with his own words, and he blocked me immediately. And so the left does that. Occasionally people on the right will do that as well. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do that. There's no reason to do that.
But not as often.
Yeah, you just don't, like, I enjoy it when lefties entertain me by getting very worked up and screaming profanities and saying, you're a thisist and a thatist, and they don't have any justification for saying that. But it is very entertaining. I think we ought to be, to borrow a phrase from Jeb Bush, a happy warrior. We shouldn't be a low-energy warrior. We should be a high-energy warrior. But we should go out there. We should have fun. If you're in politics and you're not having a good time, if you're in the world and you're not enjoying it, you might not be happy. Bad things happen. Grief happens. But if you're not finding joy, you're doing something wrong, man. So, yeah, engage with them and don't find it a tedious task. Don't look on it as this awful burden. The yoke is easy and the burden is light. Enjoy it, you'll have a fun time, and you might do some good and convince people of true ideas and make the country better.
Final question I think we have coming up in just a second. Sorry, thanks guys, I went away for a second. Is it possible the Republicans are playing 4D chess by sabotaging the safe Alabama Senate seat to help the Democrats take over the Senate so the Dems can impeach Trump? Whoa. Wow. That's some real...
And I bet they're doing it from the same Culver City soundstage where we filmed the moon landing. No, I don't know. I guess it's possible. I don't put anything past those guys. Clearly, Mitch McConnell doesn't have any favor for Roy Moore or Steve Bannon.
Do you think that Mitch is really that... I mean...
I think Mitch is a shark. I think Mitch McConnell is a total shark. But I just take Occam's razor on this. I think it would be... It's very nice for those who would like to support the Bannon tactical view of the world, the Bannon view of tactics, or the Roy Moore view of things, mm-hmm. and say, well, it's just the establishment thwarting us again. I don't really see that. Clearly, there were forces out to get him, but I think if the establishment had this information during the primary, they would have taken him out then. I think they're getting the Senate seat. It would be a better win for Mitch McConnell than intentionally flubbing it. I take Occam's razor.
This has been fun.
This has been fun.
A lot of fun. I think we have time for one final one, though.
Okay.
Okay, you ready? Tommy asks, did you grow up conservative or did you become conservative over time? Mm. Either way, what first inspired you to action?
My mother did call me a young Republican. I've had this haircut since I was 6. One of the first sentences that
I ever said.
And oh, certainly that.
And the Sperry's.
And the loafers and all that. one of the first sentences I ever uttered, I was taught by my grandfather at the kitchen table at the age of 2. Uh-huh. It was, read my lips, no new taxes. True story. story. One of the first songs I was ever taught as a kid was It's a Grand Old Flag by George M. Cohan. Yeah. And I would parade around my grandparents doing it. I've always loved the American flag. No, I just remembered this the other day when Beanie Babies were a thing. My favorite one was Liberty, and it was this. It had an American flag on it.
Yeah,
totally. And it's not like in my first grade classroom. I campaigned for Bob Dole in '96. Wow. I loved that Bob Dole was a war hero and Bill Clinton was a dirty, rotten, lecherous coward. And
you knew that at seven?
I did. In those days, you know, 6 or 7 years old, all that was on TV was the Clinton coverage.
Yeah.
So I grew up real quick. I did go through a liberal phase.
Phase
in eighth grade, ninth grade. It was just so
is
in the air.
Is that just because you wanted to try pot?
And believe it or not, I waited. I waited on that whole thing. I didn't inhale. But I went through that phase because it's impossible not to. Mm-hmm. If you grow up in New York, if you want to be fashionable and social, and you're being taught a curriculum that has been approved by the New York State Board of Education, it's very difficult not to become left-wing, and it's only when you reconsider your views that you move more right-wing. Now, I kind of came out of that. I was basically an atheist, and it was Yale that made me much more conservative. Hmm. Because it makes most people that go there more left, or you can have a reaction against it. And I noticed that the smartest people at Yale, there were a lot of smart people at Yale who were on the left, but the smartest people were conservative. And I knew a lot of smart people at Yale who were atheists, but the smartest people were Christian. And not just Christian, but Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox or Catholic Christian. And that made me pause and that made me think. And that's inspired a lot of reading. And
that's what drew you to action then, you think, your time at Yale?
Well, I don't know. I've always enjoyed action. I always was an actor, you know, so I always liked that more than the Ivory Tower or something. But what I really liked about being in a place my whole life that is left wing mm-hmm. is it makes you really know what you think. Mm-hmm. I feel pity for people on the left who go to a place like Yale or New York or California where you don't have your views challenged. So someone like Shapiro comes to your college and slices through you like butter. And that's true of all of the conservative speakers who go, Charles Murray, Ann Coulter, Andrew mm-hmm. Clavin. And I think it's really helpful, actually, if you want, as a young person, if you want to become a big conservative and understand your views, go to a place with a lot of lefties and debate them, and it will be very edifying for you.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It wasn't too bad, was it?
I loved it.
All right, and don't forget to be sure to tune in. On Tuesday, December 12th, we will be doing another episode, the fourth episode of The Conversation, and next time it will be with our very own Ben Shapiro, hosted by me, Elisha Krauss. Thank you so much for tuning in to this Michael Knowles edition of The Conversation, and we'll see you next time.